I'm Olympic and world champion diver, Laura Wilkinson, and this is the Pursuit of Gold podcast. Each week, we are unlocking the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual tools that help athletes reach their biggest goals in sports. Pursuit peeps, I'm excited to welcome on another podcaster who is also super passionate about women athletes, Jamie Middleman. Jamie founded Flame Bearers, which is the first global storytelling platform celebrating the stories of women Olympians and Paralympians. From household names to unsung heroes around the world, each featured story highlights the successes, struggles, and social issues that drive the world's most prestigious athletes. Through Flame Bearers, Jamie brings these champion stories to life through podcast, video, and live events. She has a background in media, having managed a $30 million media portfolio on behalf of the conglomerate of Yahoo, The Huffington Post, AOL, and Verizon. Her passion for sport, diversity, and inclusion inspired her to found Flame Bearers while receiving her master's in public administration from the Harvard Kennedy School, where she then received an award for her significant impact on the Harvard community. The Flame Bearers mission is to illuminate the unsung stories of resilient women athletes that inspire people to drive change for themselves in their connections with others and their communities. It is another Olympic year and Paris is looming right around the corner. If you want to make your big event extra special with some Olympic inspiration, I would love to be your keynote speaker. Contact me for more information at laurawilkinson.com/speaking. That's laurawilkinson.com/speaking. Before we get started, make sure you smash that subscribe or follow button and give Pursuit of Gold a 5-star review. But even better, share your favorite episodes with your friends. Pick 2 friends and send them your favorite episode. That helps us continue to grow, and it helps us continue to bring you more resources, tools, and inspiration. All right, I believe that there's gold in your future, so let's dive on into this episode. Jamie Middleman, welcome to the Pursuit of Gold podcast. I am super excited to have you on today and pick your brain on all these amazing things that you have learned and gathered over the years.
Thanks, Laura. I'm pumped to be here.
So you have an amazing podcast called Flame Bearers, where you're talking to female Olympians and Paralympians, which is so, so awesome, especially, you know, I'm not biased or anything, being a female Olympian. But how did you get to this? Like, why this kind of podcast?
Well, first and foremost, I thought it would be fun, but the real reason is there was a real need. So historically, 95% of sports coverage has gone to male athletes. We're now up to 15% globally. So we're making progress, but there's a quantity issue. There's also a serious quality issue when it comes to women's sports coverage. Of that 15% of coverage out there, a lot of it sexualizes women. A lot of it co-opts their narratives. Some of it is even pitying. And I wanted to tell women's stories in our own words. So it was a quantity and a quality issue. I mentioned the fun piece. I've always been an athlete. I am not an athlete of your level. So when I'm talking with Olympians and Paralympians, I definitely do not wear that cap. My background was in marketing and communications. And I said, hey, you know what? Let's combine my 2 loves of being able to work with women and work in sport and shed some light on some of the most amazing badasses out there.
I love it, man. I think you're doing that. And you talk a lot about, like, when I'm looking at some of your bio and things like that, you're really big into storytelling. Like, why is storytelling so important?
We're in an age where there's information overload. Everyone is saying, do this, buy this, support this cause, watch this, click this link. And I think one of the best ways to get people to care is to build an emotional connection. And I think the best way to do that is with stories. My overall goal is that at the end of the day, we have significantly more equity in the women's sports space. That women's sports no longer have to be women's sports. They're just sports. Mm-hmm. But I think the best way to get people who are not already part of the choir, who are not already you or me, who are banging the drum day in and day out to care, is to build an emotional relationship. So they say, wow, I actually relate to Becky, or I relate to Masuma, or I relate to Rita, and I see myself in them. And therefore, yeah, I'm going to tune in and I'm going to support her story.
There's a lot of athletes, you know, who are trying to brand themselves as well that probably listen to this show. Like, what would you say is important when you're telling your story, when you're trying to make those emotional connections with audience or with sponsors or whoever it may be? Like, what are the important elements in that storytelling?
A couple different things. And this is going to be annoying for people, but it's be authentic. So what that actually means is share who you actually are, not necessarily what you only the highlight reel. So I think we're seeing sponsors gravitate towards people who are sharing their ups and their downs, their struggles. We're seeing sponsors gravitate towards people who are talking about mental health, people who are being really vulnerable because fans can relate to them. So the first would be authentic. And I know that's challenging and not an answer that a lot of people like. The second is to really start to build your community from the ground up and to not be frustrated by slow progress. I think when it comes to social media, when it comes to sponsorship, I've talked to many athletes and rightly so, they get pissed off and annoyed. I would too. This is not negating that the progress shouldn't be faster. But I think when it comes to building a brand, it just takes time and consistency. Mm-hmm. So consistently posting on social media, consistently getting out and beating the drum for your story. And if it doesn't happen day one, to not give up and go away, but to just keep at it. And to be clear, this is not saying that we are where we should be and that you'll get a sponsor if you're doing this right. No, we still have a serious problem. But I think if you do that, that sets you up and puts you in the best position possible to maximize your odds.
When you say be authentic, I know you're like, that's annoying, but but I agree. Like, I think it is important to really share some of the things you're going through. It's a tricky line though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there are people who are putting way too much out there that are, you know, maybe trying to catch themselves in the middle of crying on camera. And like, you know, it's like, okay, how authentic is this if you're catching yourself on camera while you're in the middle? Like, you know, there's this like, what is the line? Like, where is sharing a good point? And then also like, you want somebody who's come through struggles, not just in the middle of struggles. So where is this? Like, it's kind of a hard balance, right? Especially for someone who's not in marketing, who doesn't really know what they should put out or what they shouldn't put out. Like, you have any good advice here?
Such a good question. And I think it depends on two parts. So I think it depends on who you are and what your brand is. So I have a friend who is a grief influencer. So she lost both of her parents in a murder, and she is very open about her grieving. Part of her brand, part of her persona, part of who she is actually being very open about that. That is an extreme example. Mm-hmm. Then you take someone, an athlete who is less, many athletes are less interested in crying on camera because they don't want to do that. That's not a part of who they are, mm-hmm. but they want to share productive lessons. So I think step one is being really clear about what is your brand and what are you trying to sell? Who are you? Mm-hmm. And then two is I try to think about what's productive and valuable for my listeners and my community. So is it going to be valuable for them to see me sobbing because then they can relate to me? Does that make me feel okay? Asking myself those questions, or would it be more valuable to, once I've sobbed and snotted into my pillow, to come back and then share, here are three things I learned from this experience. Mm. More of the kind of the takeaway thing. But that's kind of my personal brand and where I am. You know, it depends on who you are and what you're trying to portray.
I actually kind of love that too, just from like mindset perspective and mental health of like, if you can actually get through whatever you're going through and have lessons that you have learned from your own experience and share that with others, because then you're not just dwelling in the bad, you're actually still learning yourself. And then I think that's just super powerful. So I really like that. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
I know one of the things you really like to talk to athletes about is just resilience in the face of adversity. I mean, who better than athletes to talk about that kind of stuff with? What are some of the most impactful, if you have specific stories or just lessons in general that you've learned from talking to these amazing women?
Let me give you one example that I've heard, and then I'll share a couple lessons. So Masuma Alizadeh, she's an Afghan professional cyclist. She's on the Olympic refugee team. A lot of people are shocked by the fact that there is an Olympic refugee team. What is so unbelievable about Masuma is she grew up cycling dressed as a man because she could not go outside and get on her bike as a woman because people would throw things at her, hit her, verbally assault her. So she would always go outside dressed as a man, surrounded by male bikers front and back. And then when cars would pass her, they would realize, oh, wait, that's actually a woman. People would hang out the car windows and hit her, verbally assault her, things like that. Flash forward to today, she is leading the Olympic refugee team. She competed in the Tour de France, the female version, the FEMIS, which I don't speak French, so I'm going to mispronounce that. And she's an incredible leader within Afghanistan for women. So I think she's an incredible model of resilience because here is someone who has gone against every grain of the cultural values in her society to do what she wants to do because she loved it.
What motivates someone like that? like it's easy for me to say, oh, I had an injury and I had a reason to keep going. But like when you are getting verbally and physically assaulted, just getting on a bike, if you're a woman, like what makes you want to keep doing that?
You know, I wish we could bring her on, but some of the things that I have heard from her and other athletes who share similar on the refugee team from countries where there have been huge systemic barriers, it's kind of a couple different things. There's this inner fire, and I think that's something that all Olympians and Paralympians share. It's this single-mindedness, this level of determination where it does not matter what else is going on in the world, that this is your goal. You're going to get there, whatever it takes. Masuba absolutely has that. I think something else that I've consistently seen and heard is that many of these athletes have an incredible support system. They have fathers in countries where it usually takes a man to support a woman, or incredible mothers who are working behind the scenes, or siblings who are supporting them day in and day out to provide a more friendly and loving ecosystem for when they do feel beat up and they do feel hurt, they can go home. Their tribe has their back, if you will, that they're not truly alone.
Yeah, no, that's huge. Could you talk to a lot of international athletes? Like, how are you finding them? What is the barrier, like language barriers? Like, kind of walk me through getting these amazing people on your podcast. Like, how does that tactically work?
Totally. So this kind of goes back to the quantity and quality problems. And I'm from the United States. We watch a lot of U.S. athletes, and I'm the first to go and support all of them. I realized that a very narrow slice of the pie of women were having their stories being told, even internationally. If you look at international sports coverage, there's only a very narrow group of women who are actually having their stories covered. So I wanted to be a part of actively seeking out the women whose stories, who I thought were frequently overlooked, and being the person who gives them the mic, who shines the light on them, because I think there's a much wider range of experiences that we can learn from. And how I actually get connected to them, a lot of it was pure hustle in the beginning, I'm going to be honest. A lot of it was going through personal connections and having a target in mind and then seeing who can connect me to that individual. I've been pretty fortunate with my education. I've gone to 3 incredible different institutions that have a lot of Olympians and Paralympians within their networks, and they've connected me to different individuals. Where we are right now, it's largely word of mouth, to be honest. Our goal every time we work with someone is to produce their favorite piece ever done. So when we are finished with an athlete, 9 out of 10 times she says, hey, that was awesome. I'd love for you to spotlight and work with my friend. Here's her contact. And they just connect us directly. But historically, that was not the case. We had to do a lot of hustle. We had to do a lot of behind the scenes networking. But I think we've reached a tipping point where the athletes themselves are actually doing the connecting because they want their friends to benefit.
Have you had any, like with language barriers, like it was really difficult where you couldn't even have the conversation that you wanted to?
So we've had a couple times where we have to have a translator involved, which is definitely challenging and it changes the dynamic. We've been pretty lucky in terms of flagging that before the conversation goes with someone being like, I'm interested, but I don't speak English. So then we'll bring in a translator to join the conversation.
That's pretty cool. Now, why the name Flame Bearers for your podcast?
A couple different reasons. We focus on the athlete, not the sport. So it's the idea that these are individuals who are carrying forward a torch, and it could be a torch for pay equity. It could be a torch for racial justice. It could be a torch for maternal health care. They are the bearers or the individuals who are carrying forward the flame. And that kind of has the Olympic and Paralympic connotation of whatever it is for women in the world. And then there's also, to be very real, many restrictions around the words Olympics and Paralympics that a lot of people do not even know about. So anything mentioning Olympics, Paralympics is off the table. There's a lot of restrictions around the use of rings. So we had to get creative.
Yes. No, I think that was very good. I love it. And of course, you're talking about inner fire and everything. I love that.
Exactly. It's about the inner determination, the fire within individuals. So the imagery of fire and flame is kind of what we are based off of.
I love it because I remember the first time I saw the Olympic torch too, like in person, there was something like, wow, that does feel like the fire inside me. And like, I'm seeing that in front of me, like in reality, like it is just a really powerful image. You know what I mean? It's hard to put words to like seeing your feelings almost like in front of your face a little bit. And those dramatic moments of like the person who's been chosen to like light the torch and, you know, just all of that. So yeah, I love it.
Exactly. And the idea is that everyone is a flame bearer in a different way. So even if you're not an Olympian or a Paralympian, you're listening to this, but these themes of resiliency relate to you and you can learn lessons from these incredible athletes that you can apply in your own life.
How many different sports have you covered?
We have covered 32 different sports now, women from 65 different countries.
Wow. Are there any like themes you're starting to see like from sports or is it from countries? Tell me some like just insights you've gotten from this podcast.
Absolutely. So everyone comes in thinking that there's not going to be a lot of commonality here, that a woman from South Africa is going to have a vastly different story from a top athlete in the United States, from India. And yes, that is true. But there are many threads that kind of tie together. Mansi Joshi, who is the former world champion in para badminton, told me that after hearing Becky Sauerbrunn, who's the captain of the U.S. women's national soccer team story, she was like, we have a lot more in common than I realized. She's like, every woman who is an elite athlete is facing struggles and challenges. They're different. In Manasi's case, she faces a lot of struggles around disability bias. In Becky's case, Becky was focusing on pay equity in the United States. But her takeaway was that we all have something, usually a systemic issue, a cultural issue that you are fighting against. And she saw the similarity between them in that, which I thought was really, really beautiful.
Explain to me what the disability bias is. I've heard that a few times, but I would love for you to bring light to our listeners on what that is.
Sure. Exactly. So high level, why we work with Olympians and Paralympians. The vast majority of media coverage that does go to women, pretty much all of it goes to athletes without physical disabilities. So that's able-bodied individuals, not Paralympians or para-athletes. Disability bias is when an individual or a group has an unconscious or a conscious bias against an individual with a physical disability. Usually, one of the forms that it normally takes, as I've heard from many of the athletes, is avoidance. You don't want to look at them. You don't want to talk to them. You don't know how to bring it up. And a lot of people paint people with disabilities in kind of a pitying way. They are frequently used as sources of inspiration, whether or not they want to be. So a Paralympic athlete could be portrayed as a source of inspiration because they were born without legs. And that is the story that journalists focus on, when the athlete themselves may just want to have their story be about something completely different. So it's this idea that people have an inherent bias against people with disabilities and that can manifest in different ways, all of which are pretty much to the detriment of the individual with a physical disability as well.
How would you suggest for athletes, because we have a lot of Paralympians on the show as well, how would you suggest for athletes that want a different aspect of their story to be told? How can they start presenting that to media or on social media or listeners, like in a way that brings something else to light?
So from the athlete's perspective, how do they actually do it? Okay.
Like, can they help control that narrative? Because I know media will just cover whatever they want to cover, no matter what you do. But is there a way that they can help kind of paint what that picture looks like?
100%. I think a perfect example of this is Anastasia Pagonis. She is a U.S. para swimmer. She's a world champion, and she lost her eyesight when she was, I believe, 12 years, either 12 or 14. And she has made it her mission to change how, quote, people see the visually impaired. So on her social media, she does a lot of debunking myths of how people see visually impaired people. So she will literally go for a walk with her guide dog and say, here's what people see. This is what's actually happening. And I think she's incredibly effective in that because she is going right at what people have said to her and said, this is actually how it actually is. So if anyone is listening to this, and wants a good reference point for someone who I believe does a terrific job of this, check out Anastasia Pagonis, because she, I think, has kind of flipped the script. Usually a lot of athletes are more reactive, and I think she does an incredible job of being proactive in terms of saying, this is something that happens to me, this is how I would like to be portrayed, as opposed to just waiting back for pieces to be written about her.
I like that a lot, because I think a lot of times, and this isn't just athletes, this is everybody, we complain about how we don't like certain things or the way certain things are being said, but we do nothing about it. So
totally.
I love that you're like, yes, you can take charge of the conversation. Like, you can let your followers know, at least start there, right? I mean, if that's your audience, that's where you begin. And you let them know exactly what you want that narrative to be. I think that's super important. And, you know, again, we come back to that authenticity, because you have to be a little bit vulnerable sometimes to bring up the things that maybe you want to change the perception of. You know, you've got to be able to kind of not put it out there, but tweak it in the way that you want it said. And that's not always an easy thing to do. But are there people that, if they need advice on how to kind of spin those narratives, is there like a direction you would suggest people going in, or people they could talk to about that?
Honestly, right now, no. There's not a lot of, I mean, you could hire individual agencies, you could hire marketing firms, but there's not someone who specifically is, that I know of at least, who's specifically helping female Olympians and Paralympians with their messaging. I think that could be an incredible business opportunity.
Interesting. Anybody listening, you know, we're throwing out some great ideas right now. Oh, no, that's cool. So where do you see this podcast going and the connections that you have with people? Like, what is the direction you want it to continue to go in? Like, are you trying to enact social change with it? Are you just really trying to share the stories? Like, because I know, like, recently you did a whole series on soccer. Like, you're kind of highlighting not just, you were doing some random athletes like from all over the place, and then there was like a soccer series. Like, what's the direction you want your podcast to go?
My vision is that in 5 years, Flame Bears becomes the go-to storytelling platform for elite women athletes. We are currently expanding beyond podcasting into video and live events, all with the goal of centering the stories of women athletes. So my goal is that when people think of stories of the best females in the world, they think of us. You can kind of think of it as a elite female athlete players tribune, but we do it in more than just writing. We also do it in video and live events and podcast.
Okay. That's very cool. How do you begin to build that? How do you go from, I'm just recording a couple interviews with people, to this huge, as somebody who's just learning how to do business herself, because now that, yes, I've stepped outside of sport, like, how do you go from here to there?
So I am on the way. I can't say that I am over the hurdles, because I am not, but I can say some of the steps that I have taken. The first is coming up with a business plan. So knowing who your company is, what you bring to the table, what your quote unquote value proposition is, which means how you're different than what's out there, what you offer to your clients. So to be really clear, Just Women Sports is a company that I absolutely love. I'm a huge fan of them. They do more sports reporting work than we do. They do more about what's the upcoming match, what's the score of it. They do less about the storytelling piece that we do. So that is more our niche, if you will. So be really clear about what you bring to the table and how that's different than other companies, organizations, or individuals out there. Step two, at least for me, was building my community of support. So I started Flame Bears when I was a graduate student at Harvard, and I immediately tapped into that community to say, who's done something like this before? Who is an expert in an area that I'm not? And can I get them on my team? I was a team sport athlete. So my mind immediately goes to surrounding myself with people with skill sets who complement and are different than my own. And I think that has paid off in spades for me, because no one person can do it all. I think it's really important to know as a founder what your strengths are, but equally important to know what your weaknesses are. So then you can surround yourself with people who can have your back and who can fill those holes. So step two would be building a team, and that could be volunteer. It could be an advisory board, whatever works for you financially. And then step three that I mentioned is building out a business plan. So really getting into the nitty gritty of, where are you going to make your money? Who are you going to sell this to? Why would they buy it? Things like that.
I love it. And you hit on something so just right on the nose, because you are a team sport player. So you want to surround yourself with other people who can pick up, you know, kind of play the positions that you're not the best at, right?
Yep.
I'm an individual sport athlete. So I'm like, how do I do this by myself? Like, it's so funny. Like, that's a real struggle for me though. I've had a coach and I've had teammates, but they play very different roles from like, I expect them to do part of the work with me. You know what I mean? But I think that's really cool because it helps me remember like, okay, that's a big weakness that I have. And I have to remember that. I can't just, you know, bull nose, like ram it through and like do it all by myself. Like, I need help with those things. I think that's important. What was your sport?
I was a 3-season sport athlete in high school, but in soccer for a little bit, I played soccer. In college for a little bit, I played soccer. But before that, I did track and field and ski racing. So I have a combo, but I was more drawn to soccer.
Well, Jamie, what else can you tell us about Flame Bears that we've missed, or any amazing stories that have really stuck with you, or just the direction of where, like you said, we have made strides in women's sports, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah. So my hope is that as women, we support each other more. We have a lot of people out there who, you know, are kind of saying, let's do this. Let's, you know, they're frustrated. But they themselves don't watch women's sports. They themselves don't go to women's sports games. They don't buy the merch. They don't follow the social media accounts. And my request, my hope is that we can do a little more doing and a little less talking, or continue to talk while we do, if you will, but to really put our money where our mouth is. If you have ever said, oh, I want to support women's sports, to actually go to a game, or to actually buy a jersey, or to actually follow an athlete, because those all help put money into the pockets of the individuals. And I think that's where it starts.
And do you see it starting to change at all? I mean, because I know there's been a big push in the last few years.
Massively so. If I was an investor, I'd be super, what's called, bullish. I'd be very eager to invest in women's sports. We've seen viewership, attendance skyrocket. We've seen league valuations dramatically increase. Sponsorship in the US alone has increased 20% year over year. So I absolutely see things changing and moving in the right direction. The old idea that women's sports are a charity case is out the window. It's a strategic investment. And I think it's either get on board or get left behind.
So what do you think has been the big change in the last few years? Like, is it just more people like you, like out there trying to share these stories and get female athletes in front of people? Like, what has made the big change?
I think a lot of it is timing. I think it takes a long time for change. I think what we have seen is that, and this is a concept from someone who I spoke with named David Barry, who's a professor on this. And he told me that it takes a long time to build a fan, that I'm a Boston Red Sox fan, because I grew up going to the Red Sox games with my parents. So therefore, I'm going to support them. And we are now seeing women who grew up during Title IX take their kids to women's sports games and watch women's sports. But it takes a lot of time to have people become true fans. And I think what we're seeing now is we're seeing the women and girls who were raised by those Title IX legends actually coming into power and saying, no, I want to invest in this because this matters. But it takes time.
Yeah, for sure.
And I wish it didn't. I wish it would just happen overnight. But I think that's unrealistic.
I think that's a really smart insight. We do just have to be patient, but keep pushing, right? You don't give up just because you don't see it happening overnight. You have to keep pushing and keep going forward, believing in that goal that we have to get women out there for sure. So let's go back to how you kind of had this whole season on soccer. What was the goal with that? Why did you decide to focus on just one sport for a while? And is that something you're going to continue doing?
So essentially what we wanted to do was do a special edition in honor of the Women's World Cup, honoring the first US women's national soccer team. We are going to do more special editions that are in other sports that are tied to a international sporting event. So it's not going to necessarily be soccer related in the future, but as major international sporting events happen, that gives us an opportunity in between Olympics and Paralympics to go deep into one specific sport. Why we worked with this original team, the 1985 team, before this, their stories had never been told. This is a group of women who have largely been sidelined. And many of them, they're still grappling with this, and rightly so. never really acknowledged by U.S. soccer. This is before the women's soccer was even a World Cup sport or in the Olympics. So I thought it was important to acknowledge where this incredible legacy of women's soccer within the United States came from. As the team today has grown in notoriety, I thought it would be remiss to not show some love for the OG squad who really blazed the trail when there wasn't a trail there.
Were they pretty excited to talk about it, or were they a little like, nobody's ever asked us this? Like, what was their reaction?
All over the map, over the map. And I have to give credit where credit is due. Michelle Akers, who was FIFA Player of the Century, she was on the squad from 1985 through 2000. This was her idea.
Wow.
So she was my co-host in this series, and she is widely known as kind of the GOAT within the soccer world, if you will. She was determined on making sure her teammates' stories were out there. That said, there were people who were a little, I don't know how I feel about this. You know, they moved on. They had different careers. They couldn't afford to be soccer players because guess what? It didn't pay in the 80s and 90s. So I think it brought up a lot of memories for a lot of them. But I think what's important is acknowledging those first trailblazers and making sure they feel validated and seen, because we're in an incredibly different spot today, thank goodness. And I'm so grateful for that. But I want to make sure that we don't forget how we got there.
So where are you going from here? Are you doing anything with Paris? That's kind of a big international event coming up.
Yes. So a couple different things that we can say. So on the podcast front, we have an incredible season launching April 1st with so many women who are competing in Paris. Olympians and Paralympians from around the world. I have a rock star co-host who is a, if I give the stats, you'll probably be able to figure out, but she's a two-time Olympian, very high number of national titles for her in her respective sport. And we chat with women from all around the world who are going to Paris. So we're launching that on April 1st in honor of the end of Women's History Month, but what we hope will be the continuation of Women's History Month, because yes, the month is important, but we should live these values every day. Two other things that we have kind of coming down the pipe. We're doing some serious video work that we can't quite announce yet, but I would just say stay tuned in the future for some exciting video documentary options. And then on the event space, we are going into a number of schools and conferences, doing some remote events where we illuminate the stories of women Olympians and Paralympians. So if you are listening to this and want to get involved, definitely reach out, because the more stories we can tell, the better.
And so where do we reach out? Where can we make sure we don't miss any documentaries or events that might be in our area? Like where, yeah, how do we do that?
Totally. So first of all, our website is flamebearers.com. So that's flame as in the thing in the Olympic torch, bearers as in the people who bear the torch. On our website, there's actually a contact form. So if anything I've said today resonates and you're like, wow, that's interesting. I don't know how I want to work with Jamie, but this seems cool. Fill it out. I'll get back to you. If you don't like forms, just email me, jamie@flamebearers.com. I'll get back to you right away and we can go from there.
Do you guys have like a newsletter or anything, or is it more like we should follow you on social media or YouTube or something?
Yes. Sorry. You can follow us on social media, Instagram, X, even though I still call it Twitter, Facebook,
Twix, whatever.
Yeah. Twix, exactly. YouTube. Yeah. We also do have a newsletter.
Okay, awesome. We'll make sure to link to all of those in the show notes so people can find you, because I think this is really, really powerful. Wow. I mean, there's so many. Are there any like just stories when you think about all the amazing women? I mean, I know we highlighted some earlier, but are there any other stories or pieces of stories that somebody has told that has just stuck with you, whether it, you know, makes a difference to anybody else or not? Like, what has hit home with you the most?
Oh, this is such a challenge because I feel like I'm always being asked to choose between my unborn children. I literally, every piece that I do, it's kind of like a love letter to that athlete in a certain way, where I want to tell their story how they want it told. And I want to, nothing will ever go live without their approval. So it's very much a labor of love. Two athletes who I will throw out there. The first is Rita Simwe from Uganda. Rita, when she was in second grade, had thieves attack her home and her entire family was in the other room of her house. She distracted the thieves. They chased her down the street. They unfortunately hacked off her right hand. She woke up in the hospital. And long story short, Rita had to learn how to do everything with her left hand and is now the number one para badminton player in all of Africa, who is currently on her way to Paris. What is so, besides the horrifying details of that story, what really struck me about Rita is she's currently having to do all of her own fundraising. She does not get a lot of support. So even though she's the number one para badminton player in all of Africa, she has to raise 100% of her own funds for her racket, for her shuttlecock, in order to even go to a match to qualify for Paris. And she shared a lot about the discrimination she has faced when trying to get a job as a person with one hand in Uganda. And I think that's been quite challenging. So one of my biggest takeaways was how lucky I am to have been an athlete within the United States. And I know there are huge issues. There's a long way to go. But I think when I heard Rita's story, that put my struggles and my frustration within a global context, which was very helpful for me. Someone else I'd love to call out is Alexa Moreno. Alexa is an Olympic gymnast from Mexico. She came in fourth in the vault in Tokyo. And Alexa has been very outspoken about cyberbullying. So Alexa had and continues to be cyberbullied because of her physical appearance. People pick on her, say she doesn't have a gymnast body. It's ridiculous. Don't even get me started on it. But literally one of the best gymnasts in the world, and trolls are being horrible to her. And what I think was so incredible about Alexa and her story is that she has come up with techniques to turn out the haters, to really focus on who she is, surrounding herself with people who uplift her and support her, and come up with ways to disregard the people who are trolling her online. And I think that was such a valuable insight for me, because here you have people at the height of their game, at the top of their career, who people see as the pinnacle of success. And even them are being torn down by someone in the world. Mm-hmm. She's taken it as a part of her own daily tasks to come up with strategies to make sure it doesn't impact her personally and professionally.
I was going to say, I love this, but I don't love what's happening to her. But I think that is so true. And I coach athletes on mindset and performance. And a lot of athletes are worried about what people will think about them in some way or form, you know, and I've had to tell them, like, look, I won the Olympics and I got hate mail. You were never going to please everyone. And now with the internet, like, you can be this anonymous troll. Like, it is vicious out there. But we talked about wanting to be authentic, but then you put this vulnerable stuff out there. You're like inviting it in too. So there's that, like, some people don't want to do that because of the backlash they can get from it. So what
totally
can you share some of the things that she mentioned? Like, what are her tactics? How does she deal with that? Because I think that's a really big deal right now for everyone.
The most important piece she said was being really clear about your community or your tribe. So being very clear about the people who uplift you and tuning into their voices. Mm-hmm. So be it your family, be it your friends, be it your teammates, who are the voices who uplift you, and listening to them. The other part was more actually blocking people, actually actively getting off social media for certain parts of the day.
You can turn off social media for parts of the day? Wait a minute. Can you actually put your phone down? Are we allowed to do that? Can we turn our phone off for like a day? Is that allowed?
Exactly. When it doesn't serve you, don't do it.
Right.
Don't do it. Doing the thought experiment of realizing who these people are that are actually spamming me are not voices that I respect. They are not people in my inner tribe. And therefore, I'm not going to give them the time of day that I would a good friend of mine. They are literally some dude in a basement that I will never meet. And therefore, I don't need to give it the time of day. So doing the thought work around who is this person who is taking the time out of their life to spew hateful content about me. And then why should I care about some random person that I'm never going to meet, who's never done gymnastics in their life, who doesn't know how gymnastics work? Like, doing that thought work to really invalidate them, really.
Because the armchair quarterback eating Doritos in his basement does not have a gymnast body either. I'm pretty sure. Yeah,
exactly.
Now that's a good one. Any others?
Those were the top three that really resonated for me.
I think those are so good. I love it. And I think it's so powerful. I mean, like one reason I keep telling people why I started the podcast was I had just come back to diving after like stint in retirement. I had kids and having been a three-time Olympian though, I had no resources because I wasn't a current national team person or whatever. So I was like, well, how do I get answers to my questions? So I just started the podcast to bring people on and start asking questions. That's and also so cool. I've always been inspired by other athletes. And I think like some people like to stick with just learning about their sport, which I think is great. But I think we can learn a lot of things from the spread of sports because although they do different things, there are, like you said, a lot of crossovers. There are similarities. There are challenges. And like, if we see how people work through things differently, it may give us more just kind of tools for our tool belt or ammunition to use. Like what we don't know if it'll work for us. It's good to try different things. I have just loved what I've learned, you know, and now that even though I'm retired, like I love still learning and still growing. And I think there's so much that people have to offer just by sharing their stories. They don't realize sometimes how powerful it is, but that is like the biggest thing that we have is our own stories. And that's what connects us with people. So when we learn how to tell it, or we have people like you help us that help us share our stories and get it out to people, we can really start impacting our community, the world, like who knows who, you know, you may not always see the fruit of that, but like you can actually know that you are impacting the world in a cool way and making a big difference. So I'm thankful for you for helping all of these athletes make that difference because now you are making that difference and sharing all of their stories. And it's just kind of this cool trickle effect, I think, all the way down.
Thank you. Well, I think it's the athletes who get the credit and I'm just giving them the mic and the credit that they have earned and is long overdue.
But that mic is super important because you can have the best story in the world, but if nobody hears it, does it make a difference? You know what I mean? So you are giving them the opportunity to connect, and that's huge. So we thank you for that. Thank you for coming on the show and sharing all these like amazing insights and things that you've learned. And we will definitely be making sure to subscribe and follow, right, listeners, because we want to see what's coming because it's very exciting.
Perfect. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. And please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. This allows us to keep bringing on amazing guests, and it also helps other athletes to find this show. Make sure to check out the show notes to follow us on social media and learn more about our awesome guest. To hear all of our amazing episodes, head on over to thepursuitofgold.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. The Pursuit of Gold is proud to be a Podigy production. That's all for now. Make sure to tune back in next week.